Yep.
Or is going to be conflicted. I did not sign myself off. I don't care. We're just going to play it out on that. Like, people that don't know who these guys are.
Well, we've been bagging Phil and Don. We could get through the whole Microsoft crew.
Yeah, I do feel like Magic was probably the worst. He's like...
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
I just feel like the current leadership is spineless.
Yeah.
Matri had a vision. A shit vision, but a vision.
Player 2 Pixelcast episode 164. My name is Tim Henderson. I am your host today. Whenever this episode lands, it's probably going to land on time, which is all good and great because I'm like super trying to get organized with some shit. But what I've realized now is like, Huso, please introduce yourself because I have not timestamped this shit yet.
Well, I'm Huso and I'm here on the podcast with Tim and Rob. Rob, how about you?
Hey.
Hey, Rob.
Hello.
Yeah, so
that's an intro.
Yeah, that there we go. We have an intro. We did it, guys. Now we just need, you know, about an hour or so of filler.
Mm-hmm.
And we can put like a slice of bread on the other side.
Yep. Nice little bow and get
sure,
it ready.
Put it in a box like in a Japanese store and make it all like pretty and beautiful. No, we are actually going to, you know, have a focused talk with something to talk about in games. In this case, because of like certain, I don't want to dwell on certain events, which already because cycles move so fucking fast, feels like a year old news. But kind of like springing from like Phil Spencer rapidly deciding he has to be the bad guy now. Probably still better than Matrick, but boy, his image is going to be taking a beating. I'm going to kind of look back to the era that was when the Xbox was launching into games and the kind of like the hope and the promise and just the vibes back then, which I feel like were a lot better, generally speaking.
Yep.
Like just me talk about what we're looking forward to, what our favorite games were, like what we predicted things would be like, who we thought would end up wearing console races, yada, yada, yada. But before that, you know, we've been playing actual games and we've got like a weird smorgasbord of stuff that people may not have even heard of this week. So this is kind of like wild. Huso, how's the weather over there?
Well, I'm up against it, hey? I'm playing Against the Storm. And now, if you haven't seen that, it's been out on PC for a little bit, and it's just hit console. It is a... Imagine if you took Tropico and crossed it with a roguelike. That's what Against the Storm is. And... I love it. It's super addictive.
You said Tropico already. I was like,
it's a city builder. And it's a city builder and an economy manager game. And basically you're set out in, you're in this world where there's this storm that happens. The goal is to build 4 settlements and get to a piece of this crystal that will hopefully stop the storm from reoccurring. So, and you've got 4 turns, 4 cities essentially to build to get to that. Each city takes you about, 45 minutes to make. So it's a brief version of this sort of game. Win each city, you have to keep the queen happy at the same time. So you've got kind of this meter that is growing up as the queen gets impatient. And to keep her patience level down, you have to complete mission tasks while you're in there. So missions might be like sending a certain amount of lumber back to the castle or, you know, encouraging a certain amount of trade or, you know, these sort of things. And so you're not only managing your own city's economy, you have to manage this meter and try and get your settlement to a level that you can progress to the next settlement and get closer to that crystal to stop the storm. It's a really nice little mechanic. It obviously, due to the nature of the game, a run is a bit longer than what you would expect from a lot of roguelikes. So this is the sort of a casual Sunday afternoon sort of game, not something you just bump in for 20 minutes like a lot of roguelikes are. But the mechanics are great. It's a kind of in a fantasy world. So there's like 4 or 5 different races of people, you know, humans, there's dwarves, there's lizard men, and there's like these elf creatures, and each of them have their own needs and you've got to keep them happy with shelter and with specific foods. So you do all this on your map, and the map is set up in a really interesting way. So you start off in this little glade in this grand map that's covered with the fog of war, and you need to open up more glades. Each glade is separated by a string of trees. So your woodcutters are essentially your most essential kind of workers. Some of these glades have bonuses in them. All of them have more resources, but you don't know what resources you're going to get when you go into it. So you kind of got to work on the fly. There's a lot of time where buildings become superfluous because you realize there's no more of that resource on the map. So you've got to be happy to destroy a building and get the resources back and build something that's more appropriate. Assigning the workers to each job. It's a really well-built system. The only catch is on the console version, you're using a controller.
That was the Switch version. Wondering. That's the first thing that has to come out now.
It does a pretty good job. Like, you know, this is, and due to the nature of the game, you can actually pause it while you issue commands, which is really handy for, you know, console, because it's just fine movement. You can't do it on the fly quickly. So there's like four different time speeds like you usually would, but there's also a pause, which is just a button press, and you can issue commands to do while it's paused and then start the game again, and they'll go and do those commands, which makes it easier in console because you're not fighting the controller so much against the time. The good news was my Xbox copy of it came, it's Play Anywhere, so I could play it on my PC as well. So I've kind of been, because I'm actually reviewing it on the console version, but I've also been trying it on the PC to get the difference. And yeah, it's better on the PC, but it's a pretty good version on the console. And seriously, like if you like SimCity, if you like Tropico, if you like those sort of games, this is a really cool spin on that sort of formula by adding this roguelike mechanic to it. And each time you run, you unlock kind of new buildings or new resource gatherers or, you know, some bonuses to keep the queen happier for longer. And so it gets a bit easier to get those early cities out. There's bonuses depending on where you build the city on this kind of overarching world map. You know, there might be an enchanted glade near where you build it, and that gives you a bonus for production, or there might be a haunted mine there where it's really hard to keep your citizens happy because they're always getting hassled by ghosts or something like that. So it's a really well thought out game. There's a lot to it. It's really got its teeth into me. Like I said, the biggest problem I have is finding time for a game like this. If I wasn't reviewing it, it'd be the sort of game I could only, you know, if I had a couple of hours to kill on a Sunday Arvo, which is how I play Tropico, you know, or those sort of games. It's that kind of kickback, maybe with a beer, sit down and play with the mouse and just lean back and enjoy it. And that's the sort of game it is. So I can't see it being a game you sit there and just put 50 hours in the first week you get it. But as a game that I just want to keep playing and coming back to on a regular basis, it certainly hits the mark. So I'm really, really positive on it. PC is obviously the best version, but don't fret. The console version works, and it works
pretty well. Is there a Switch 2 version?
I'm not aware of yet. There may be coming.
I've toyed with that mouse, and it may not be comfortable to hold for more than an hour, but it works.
It works.
Shockingly well, actually. Like, on the sofa beside you, even, it's like, oh, wow. Like, it straight up just does what you expect without any hitches.
I'll just have I think it's only PS5 and Xbox at this point. Oh, no, there's the original Switch.
That Switch feels 2. Like a wasted. It feels like a wasted opportunity. I suspect Nintendo and dev kits may be the issue there. Really.
I suspect it too. It may get an update later to a Switch 2 version, which would be cool because, that'd suit. But yeah, good game. Get on it if you like that sort of thing. I was really surprised by how it got its teeth into me.
It's got like a cool little cartoony Warcraft style to it as well that I kind of like. Anyway, Rob, I just referred to something old. Are you playing something old?
Yeah. Oh, well, it's in the vein of something old. So this is something playing Cyberpulse. I saw it mentioned a while ago on socials and had it on my wish list, and it came up for on sale during the last Steam sale because I can't really afford to buy the really expensive stuff right now. So it was discounted a fair bit, and I kind of think I paid a good price for it. So SoberPulse is basically your some sort of antivirus. It's sort of a computer thing. I can't remember the blurb from the store page, and it doesn't really tell you anything in-game. But it basically plays like a twin stick, like Geometry Wars. It reminds me a lot of especially like Geometry Wars 3, where you've got like different stages. You don't pick the game mode. You have different stages that have the different modes in there. So you've got your normal attack stages. You've got ones where there was one stage where you're just like surviving as long as you can. You're in this smaller arena. It was like a triangle, and enemies, just more and more enemies spawned that you couldn't destroy. And there was another one where it was like a duel, where you're in this arena that sort of shifted around slightly and you had to fight the enemies. The big thing that makes it different from just about every other twin stick out there is how you actually engage enemies. So you don't have, you know, your Geometry Wars or everything else, you usually got a gun of some kind that you push the right stick to fire. Here you have this sort of energy field that sits in front of your ship. So when you leave the stick neutral, it's off. When you move the stick, it's on, and it focuses a bit of that ring. So it's like a ring in front of your ship, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens is when you come into contact with an enemy with that focus part of the ring, it's like you hit him about. You hit him across the playfield, and they're destroyed when they smack into a wall.
So it's like Geometry Wars crossed with Breakout.
Yeah. It looks Geometry Wars as shit going by the screenshots.
Yeah, it's very, very like that neon thing. But yeah, because you basically, like, I think of it as a little more like tennis.
Okay.
When you, like, especially when you flick, because you might come in, because what happens is, though you shift direction and your ship turns and the ring relative position changes, the direction you're focusing doesn't change. So you might turn and then come into an enemy and have to shift the focus of this ring in order to hit them. Mm-hmm. And then it sort of feels like tennis. You hit them and again, they go into the wall. And it makes it feel really different. It's definitely a bit of a mind screw getting used to how that approach works. But like, I had another sesh yesterday and got to the point where it's like some of these stages have the three-tier objectives of like, you know, one's like score X points, score Y points, and score Z points. And so it does the thing that, like you'd expect in Geometry Wars, when you die and get game over, you can hit restart and just go back right away. So it's got the hooks in you to just want to continue right where you left off when you mess up and die. And I really, like, there's a bit of variety to it that I really like. You've also got a dash. You can also get, like, this power-up that's, like, different kind of powers. Like, one was, like, a massive explosion ring that was, like, imagine your sort of circle thing centered around you and expanded out and then pushed everything out to the walls. So you've got a few things like that. And then you can unlock stuff. So there's a lot of stuff in there. I'm still only early days with it. But I'm kind of appreciating it for doing something a bit different with the formula. The execution is like mostly there, just a little awkward around the edges, particularly with the way that control works. But I've been having a good time with it. It's like I said, it's something a little different within that formula, because a lot of twin stick games, they kind of get samey after a while without like trying to introduce something new.
Yeah.
And yeah, this is actually doing something pretty neat. Definitely worth a look. I imagine, as far as I know, it's only on PC. The Steam build is Windows, Mac, Linux. I've just been playing it on the PC. I don't think my Mac is good enough to run most new stuff now. But yeah, I imagine it'd be really cool if you had a Steam Deck or an Ally or, you know,
insert handheld PC like du jour.
It feels like it'd be perfect for that. I mean, if it ended up coming to Switch, I'd probably buy it there. I
literally bought Geometry Wars 3 in the Steam sales just so I could play it on my ROG, you know, because I felt like that'd be the perfect game for it, you know.
Yeah, like that was – Geometry Wars 3 was on Vita, and I loved it there. Mm. So, yeah, it's perfect for that. So, yeah, I think it's definitely worth a look. I would probably say I think getting it on sale was the right move. I don't know if it's really worth the full price.
I'd say from a consumer's perspective, if you can get it on sale, getting it on sale is always the right move.
Yeah, but, like, I do think, you know, like, supporting indies is important, and – that's sort of where that comes from. So, like, I feel bad saying I'm not sure that's worth the full price, but yeah. But definitely a positive game, and I'm definitely enjoying it. Definitely need to go back and clock up some more hours in it for sure.
It really does look like it, especially if you have a Steam Deck OLED and you've got like proper HDR. Ooh, yeah. Like it looks like a game that would absolutely pop. Speaking of games that don't have HDR, and this is just my thing this year, apparently. I've been playing a thing that I think the review embargo for may have literally just dropped. Eric is Home. Or, you know, if you want to say it properly, Eric's Home. The Stolen Dream.
Eric's Home.
Eric's Home. Mm. Yeah, I will not have a review of this out by the time the game is released because, yeah, behind the scenes, it took them a week and changed longer than we thought it might because console certification and shit to get the key to me. So all the time I had set aside where I think I can do this kind of evaporated like really, really fast. And now it's just going to be a case of can I finish it or at least play enough of it to feel guilt-free about reviewing it before I'm not in the country and able to play it anymore because this is very much locked to my PS5. And the opening cutscenes at least make you go, oh, maybe this is already not one for like the Switch 2. But yeah, we're going to get to a little of the disjointed way the production values in this game works because this game opened like very kind of still but very nicely lit cinematic scenes with legitimately very impressive facial animation.
Yep.
Like, really, really impressive facial animation. Like, that goes on... This is not a Kojima game. It goes for a sensible length of time, and then you're, like, thrown into gameplay, like, pretty quickly after the cops show up and say, yeah, it's nothing. It's no trouble. We just want you to come and speak outside and go, well, they probably started developing this game 3 years ago, but boy, like, not trusting the police at your door really feels like a very well-timed theme at the moment.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah. You run away, and then the game is aggressively isometric.
Aggressively
like,
so.
I say that because, like, you remember, like, classic Metal Gear.
Yep.
But, like, you know, if you, like, got behind cover and things, the camera would kind of swing down, you'd get more of what the character's looking at. There is none of that in here. There's a tiny bit of, like, zoom in and out, but there's no camera tilt. It's, like, rotate and scroll, and that is it. And it sure is a choice for a stealth game.
Ooh.
And it's a weird twist because on one hand, yeah, you can see a lot of stuff that the character realistically could not, but you also kind of can't get a perspective of what they can see. And that kind of feels kind of jarring and taking me a while to make my peace with this because to its benefit, it's actually pretty good and pretty clear about like what the rules are. I'm going to go somewhere with this. So it's like, it's very early on. It's like, oh no, man, I don't like walking over that metal. You'll find a note, actually, I think. Someone's like, stop walking on the metal grating. It's keeping me up at night. It's like, ah, oh, there's your very subtle hammer on the head way of saying, walking on metal makes noise and will, like, you know, attract the guards. And so it sets up, though, like, the rules of how that stuff works pretty well. But what I've found, like, the further I've gone in is this is better thought of mostly as, like, a character puzzle game with a, like, layer of stealth game paint put over the top because you're like there's not really much in some ways it's more realistic than others because like you have very like if a guard starts to spot you have very little time like almost none to like kind of get back behind cover and reestablish yourself, which coming from Assassin's Creed Shadows is a very different experience.
Yeah,
because holy crap, you can like run across a rooftop and like flip down the other side of the castle and get out of the sight in that game. You're not doing that here. But like it's just every time you get seen it's just like an immediate game over.
Old school.
Yeah, and I think it's like this has to be a development team size and capability thing. I just don't think they have the AI programming chops or resources, I guess.
Yeah.
Because we are talking just set patterns of like what the police will like kind of march around in. They do a lot of like when you first walk into the scene, they'll be chatting to each other and like do the little bit of like world building. This is going on. We still can't find this girl, which is who you are. And then they'll kind of just walk out and then it's just a routine pattern. It is really kind of like finding the solution with the timing. They don't feel like people at that point.
Yep.
So and once I get into that acceptance, like, all right, I'm starting to like enjoy this now. It's not living up to like the potential that I hoped. And again, like those cutscenes, so beautifully directed and so at odds with what the game actually is. It's a very confusing decision. Like, I guess they could and, like, they had an artist who wanted to and they let them, but I feel like a comic book kind of thing or, like, still frames would actually have fitted with the game's vibe a lot more because they don't do it. Like, you can't, like, the rest of the game is just not cinematic like that. Looks nice. They've done a good job of, like, it's a fictional European like area. And you're like the most street urchin-y characters who have ever been older than actual children, I guess. Like we're like all the drop T's, like very sincerely done. The voice acting is not bad, actually. Sometimes I feel like I stand a little too close to the microphone, but it's good to have clear dialogue, so I kind of take that. This is not a Christopher Nolan cannot understand what the fuck the characters are saying joint at all, which is kind of nice. But yes, I'm having a like up and down. Generally enjoying it. Actually, I already got distracted, so yeah. I think they've done a pretty good job where you can tell, you can see the Unreal Engine in this, but at the same time, it still manages to feel like the kind of worn out, like industrial British era, the Bart Simpson's shiny shoes governor type street. Yeah. I'm getting that before, except again, a lot more serious, like in earnest about it. A lot of cops are after you though, like, and the story is still, I don't know, it starts out with a whole, okay, this is like we've invented a plague called the Hardpox, and that's just kind of like faded to the background. I don't, you're looking for your brother, and that's still the through thing, but like the overall story is still, I guess I'll see if they tie it together well or not.
If it sticks to landing,
if it just brings everything, if it remembers what it's doing, I think is. So yeah, right. Anyway, To the credit, there was actually one other thing I wanted to give the credit for, which they've done a pretty good job so far of like between, I guess you'd call them stages, mixing up objectives and introducing new things. So you start off literally just kind of like hiding as like avoiding the metal surfaces, and then you eventually kind of get blow darts to like knock guards out with. AI problem again, if they find a body, game over immediately. There's no... that really actually kind of shat me a little bit. But they do a pretty good job of like always finding a new gimmick or something like every 40, 50 minutes.
Keeps it fresh.
It's still like, I mean, we'll see where my final thoughts stand. I'm like kind of leaning towards like a letter grade player. I'm leaning towards B minus, and we'll see if it gets sloppy towards the end, it could go down. If they kind of do pull the strings back together, it could go up a little bit. It's a current feeling. They can change, people. We'll find out once the review happens, which I hopefully will still be able to write because I actually do miss writing. I haven't done that in a while. And yeah, with that, with all that chaos that's been going on behind the scenes as well, we are going to take a short break where the doorbell is allowed to ring. And when we come back, I don't know, it's going to be like early aughts.
Early aughts.
We're back, and I'm like trying to imagine what it's like to be a fresh-faced university student again. Like, I'm really doing my best. I wolfed down a piece of like takeout pizza in the break, actually.
Method acting.
Like, right, completely on brand, absolutely there. We even had pineapple on it. Like, we're like literally living like a full disgusting 23-year-old. Like, so, I mean, yeah, the short of it is, like, I guess we assumed everybody knew what I was talking about at the beginning of the show, but anybody who is listening to this because they sometimes listen to a games podcast and don't follow the news, Microsoft sacked a shit ton of people. Everybody kind of saw, like, layoffs coming, but we thought it'd been so bad last time. We thought Xbox would get, like, a slight trim and it would suck for those involved, but Xbox got hammered.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, is there going to be another, like, mainline Forza now? Are there enough people left at that studio? Like,
Nope.
Brands forever in, like, studios just gone. Like, we learned that John Romero had a studio deal with Microsoft. Like, the first we learned about this fucking thing.
Yeah.
With Microsoft.
He mentions it in his book that he's working on an FPS, but he didn't mention that he had a deal with Microsoft. No. Yeah.
So the first, yeah. The wild thing is, and I believe Romero actually seems like a decent guy. He was saying, like they literally had a meeting with Microsoft like a day or two before and things looked fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's obviously like their immediate, their immediate contact was completely unaware. So it's just like, the cord has been cut from up above, like several levels above.
I suspect the cord's been cut above Xbox.
Yeah.
But what shit me about the whole thing, and I did write something if you want to read it, was that the Xbox leadership failed to show any leadership, even though, look, I'm sorry, but if you're on estimated worth of $25 million just salary a year, you can afford to take a pay cut to keep people
Remember Iwata? Remember Iwata? Only the good die young. That's basically where we're at.
Like, honestly, he's got Microsoft stock and all those, and Bond and Booty are just as fucking bad, but they've all got stock in Microsoft. They are not hurting. They are in a position of safety, and that safety should allow them to be stronger leaders and stand up for their staff, and they didn't. They just bowed down to Lord and Savior Nutella and just fucking capitulated on all these people, and it's fucked. It's proper fucked.
So yeah, the whole idea of this is we don't want to dwell on this too much. Yeah. We kind of like want to go back to like an era where we thought things were like hopeful and growing, and there were reports coming out every other year that games were like catching up to movies and becoming the biggest medium in the world. And
yep,
God. So yeah, like remember when we first started to hear about the Xbox? Remember that like gigantic silver fucking like literal X?
Like, I remember being, like, kind of excited to see, because, it'd been, more than a decade from, like, a Western company having a top-flight console in the battle.
Yeah.
Right? Mm. 15 years at least or more. And so it's, like, a Western company coming to bring this in, I think that would be really interesting. Like, that was one of the things I was sort of, like, really excited about when they announced Xbox. It was like, okay, let's see what they do.
The fact that at the time I was, when it first came out, I got it for my 21st, I think. And I was, an APS3 public servant on a $35,000 a year, with my first mortgage. So like I couldn't afford a gaming PC anymore. I'd grown up as a PC gamer my entire life. But the Xbox felt like the natural successor for me to go to in the console space because of its association with PCs. And essentially it was, for all intents and purposes, a PC with a different OS on it. So that's what excited me, because it felt like that's where I was going to get my PC gaming fix, in front of a telly. And that's why I was super keen on it. And it saved me from having to save up for a $3,000 PC at the time, which, it wasn't going to happen.
In $3,000 in $2,000 is a lot. Although that said, a $35,000 salary, you could have actually lived on that back then.
We did a lot of 2-minute noodles and things.
I guess if you got the mortgage, yeah.
Yeah.
But it would stretch a lot further than it would now.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like where I'm getting it. Yeah, I was really conflicted about it. Because I was, like, in, like, peak discovering anime. And with that, like, learning, like, how much of the shit that I loved in my childhood was actually from Japan, when I'd always just assumed it was, like, America and Europe.
Yeah.
The idea of, like, an American... And, like, the Xbox did look brutish. Like, the console design is terrible.
Yeah.
And, like, the controller seemed really dumb. And I was like, And we're also in an era of PC gaming where I was turning off PC gaming because everything was starting to become a World War II game, which did not interest me at all. Might interest me more now if I got into the politics of it properly a little bit, but a lot of this was just kind of like glorified soldier era gun fest porn. So I was backing away from PC gaming pretty hard, and then like PC gaming was like, and we're bringing a first-person shooter front and center into the console space. And I'm like, oh god, Microsoft has a shit ton of money. I don't know if this is going to be where we want to go. But also, like, you know, the Dreamcast was probably still remains my most beloved console ever. And, you know, that was kind of the first step that had a cut down version of Windows that like three games actually used on it. And like Sega had, you know, dissolved is the wrong word, but like it became a publishing house very, very quickly. And I don't know what decisions led to what games going where. But Jet Set Radio went to like Xbox, and when I saw Jet Set Radio Future running, I was just like, oh dear. Like, this looks really fucking good.
Yep. It was a great little system, and I think the biggest thing it did, and it's something that no one could ever take away from Microsoft, is it brought online to consoles. And it did it well. Like, PC gaming at the time, you were playing through GameSpy servers or you were playing in-game server browsers. But the first time you booted up, say, Halo 2 with Xbox Live, it just worked. It worked. You jumped in. You found a game. I mean, they made it. At the time, it felt a bit restrictive in that you pretty much just had to have broadband. You could get around
I'm
things.
I'm sitting here with a little flag again saying with a Dreamcast Spiral on it here.
I know, but the Dreamcast.
It didn't succeed enough, but there was a.
The Xbox
was
ran.
A pretty big thing for a while.
Yeah.
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 It paid, again, the Dreamcast laid down like those pavements.
Yeah. And they just made it work, and it was, I think, the biggest achievement that Xbox has ever done is bringing
forced Sony to move.
Yeah, is bringing online into our lounge rooms, and Nintendo could be argued they're still catching up. So,
I mean, like the other thing that was great as well was even before like Xbox Live was a thing, being able to just take like an Xbox and a thing to make a place and do Xbox LAN.
Yeah.
Like, I remember doing that.
Awesome.
Yeah, that was something that was really, like, I never got to do the PC LAN party because...
Yeah.
But I was able to go to a cousin. My cousin organized one of them once. And it was just like, you know, 8 Xboxes in the room with a bunch of screens. It was amazing.
Yeah.
I got to do both on a small handful of occasions, and the Xbox one is better just because the way that it, like, you have less screen space. You've got this tiny, like, and TVs were like 50 centimeters back then as well.
Yeah.
So you've got this tiny quarter of that, but like the way, like, socially integrated, like, because like the PC is still kind of like boxed in at your desk a little bit, whereas like Xbox, your beanbags. Also, the fact that it got really cheap really fast in Australia. So, like, I had a shit ton of friends, like, that Beast Pack, like, everybody when it came with Halo. Sega GT and Jet Set Radio Future. I was the only person I think I knew who cared about the Jet Set Radio part of that portion. Everyone was just buying it for Halo.
Yeah.
Store near me where I almost bought one was like doing a deal where you still got Sega GT and Jet Set Radio Future and you can just choose any other game you liked because they were just taking the Halos out and like just because it's like we can sell this. Pick any game off the shelf that you want.
I want Halo.
It meant that like we did have a bunch of people who all had. Because you could link PlayStations together. I never saw it happen, though.
No.
It did mean that, like, I've never owned an Xbox console. I came really fucking close with the first one. I actually borrowed them from friends a couple of times. So I had an Xbox in my house for probably about a year almost all up. I remember just contributing, like, a TV to, like, one of those LAN parties. And, like, we just had four different rooms of the house with, like, these. Yeah, it was fucking awesome. So, yeah, that awesome experience. They also killed it by introducing the online player.
They did.
That's true.
Yeah.
I would love to do shit like that again. It's so much fun. And, yeah, online play is great and convenient and all, but...
Yeah, I remember at work, like, early days of Switch 1, just a bunch of us, because I was in a co-working space, a bunch of us would go down at lunch, have lunch, pull out Switches and play that, and that was about the closest...
To a LAN party,
Yeah,
but LAN party involves pizza and soft drink and maybe beer, I guess, so, depending on, like...
Yeah,
after hours. You don't bring your favorite controller. This is not what you bring,
No, you bring the Cheeto Dust controller.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but there's a brief period where I did think we were going to see more of this. I think I actually believe that the console LAN party would become a bit more common than it...
Yeah. It actually did.
Yeah, that
actually
that
did.
Definitely...
And online probably has a lot to answer for.
Yeah.
It does. I think, the world changed when it went online. So, you know,
absolutely
there was no desire anymore when you could play with your mates from your own couch. And it's not the same.
Yeah.
And it's not. You know, old people like us always wax lyrical about couch co-op and things like that, which is kind of gone now, except in a very few instances. So, yeah, it is kind of sad that that sort of social aspect of gaming has changed the way it has.
It has, but, like, just to stay in this era, because, I mean, we've probably been talking a lot about the original Xbox, but it's just, like, that...
Yeah.
The excitement of that era, like, I remember, like, very... Like, you didn't hear... I guess they still happened, but you didn't hear about layoffs, and they definitely were not happening on the same scale as they are now. And because production values would... Well, we're still at that point. We've done episodes about this before where, like, every couple of years you would just get your eyeballs melt out again because they're, like, releasing... They're reaching, like, a new benchmark of, like... It's like, how the fuck did they bump back that? Or like, wow, that doesn't look polygonal anymore. Or like, there are shadows in the right direction. Like, basic shit like that would, like, have you...
It's like... I can't remember if it was the last time I was on, but a while ago, and I remember we were talking Splinter Cell.
Yep.
And, like, the first time seeing Splinter Cell in action with the shadows.
Blew my mind. Like...
Yeah.
I remember just... It was in an EB kiosk as well. I wasn't even playing it in somebody's house. And yeah, like Sam Fisher was just like in front of like a rotating fan with like these pillars of light like shining through. I'm sure it looks terrible now, but my gosh, it was.
Yeah.
Oh, and the other thing was like, oh, that was one of the other things. Oh, I'm trying to remember some other stuff was like seeing Outrun 2. And it's like, because even like arcade perfect stuff, like you look at like Dreamcast stuff. Was you know, fairly was close, but, like, knowing that, like, the Outrun 2 coin-op is basically Xbox hardware with a bit, like, more RAM.
Yeah.
I was just like, wow. And, again, that was another one that was amazing to play land on.
I think that was the gen that really put the nail in the arcade coffin, too.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden...
Sega did it to itself, really, because the Dream... Again, before the Xbox, like, they made Naomi board, which is just a slightly more powerful Dreamcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm not just talking about Sega, but just about everything. Like, you were getting Soul Calibur and stuff on the Xbox and the PlayStation 2, and it was as good, if not better, than the arcade version, you know, things like and Tekken and you know Tekken Tag, I think, was a launch title for PS2, wasn't it? And it was
PAL version of that was garbage, but
yeah. But the NTSC version was essentially the arcade version.
It was better than the arcade version. Yeah. Much like Soul Calibur on the Dreamcast, they were both like just these wild upgrades.
So I think they were the nails in the good old arcade's coffin. Was that era? It really was. Just sorry, boys. Spend your money at home now.
It was...
Yeah.
It's a whole other thing. You know, the thing I was trying to get to with, like, the production values hadn't got complete... Like, games were starting to get expensive, but they hadn't gone completely out of control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that you still got a lot more, like, just throwing shit against the wall and just seeing what sticks. And it would not ruin a company if this wild swing did not sell 5 million copies.
My favorite example of that is Steel Battalion. Right.
Yeah, with the
mecha game with the stupid control stick that technically we didn't get in Australia because it was so expensive to ship.
Yep.
Like, I could not see a publisher try that in this day and age.
No chance.
Because there's no chance. They're not going to spend that money to make a controller for one game, two games.
No.
No.
No chance.
I think if Miyazaki pulls off another Elden Ring scale success a couple of times, they may give him a vanity project.
Advanced Poison Swamp Simulator. 100% Poison Swamps.
I imagine the peripheral that's going to come with it, though. Like, your toes just feel like they're burning. There's something like... like a special nail polish that doesn't actually hurt you, but it just feels like pain.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah, I know what you mean about those games, though, and I miss those kind of games that were like Midway used to make a lot of them. Like, there was PsyOps, and they were, you know, based on kind of genres you'd played before, but they took wild swings within that genre. So there was, like, PsyOps, there was The Suffering, which was a horror game, you know, and these kind of – it's kind of that single-A game, but they were weird and they were trying new and they weren't just – cut and paste what you'd seen before.
Like, everything did, because of the production values were low, not everything had to be go big or go home.
Yeah.
And it's that experimentation that, like, it gave us these games that were interesting and weird and not perfect, but that was still interesting. And that's something I definitely miss as well. Like, so I think we've lost a lot from that era.
I'm looking at not my favorite studio, but one a lot of people like. I'm looking at a Rockstar Games release timeline.
Oh, yeah.
At the moment. And, like, Grand Theft Auto just comes out in 1998, and then they released three more games in 99.
Yep.
And then, like, 2000, 2001 have, like, four or five each. Three more come out in 2003. No, six, actually. Sorry, this thing's confusing. They were just getting shit done.
Yep.
And I was like, how long has it been since Red Dead Redemption 2 until Grand Theft Auto 6? One fucking game. Like, I mean, I'm sure there's been plenty of content drops and expansions and things in Grand Theft Auto Online. But, like, this is...
Yeah.
2018, I think, was Red Dead.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, 2018, 2019. Yeah.
Which in itself is a good 5 years or so after GTA 5, which just got multiple re-releases.
I feel Rockstar's the direction they've gone. I mean, if people are still using Red Dead 2 as a benchmarking tool for PC games, you know, it was pretty future-proof. You can see where the time goes into a Rockstar game.
But is it worth not getting all this wild ass shit that is?
Oh no! I'm just saying. I mean, I think that in the case of Rockstar, their decisions are fairly justifiable. I'm not sure it's the same in places like Ubisoft, where they used to make weird shit. Where are the cool Rayman titles? Where'd they go? Where are the?
Well, they made an apparently pretty decent Prince of Persia game, and then the team got shot down.
Yeah, and there's the new, they've farmed out two of their weirder stuff. Like, there's the Rogue Prince of Persia, which just hit 1.0, which is fantastic. It's by the guys that made Dead Cells. And their new Heroes of Might and Magic game, they farmed out to the Manor Lords publisher to do. So it's like a conjunction thing, which is very weird. Man. But
early aughts, Ubisoft was like, this is the era of Beyond Good and Evil.
Yep.
And Sands of Time. Sands of Time was so good. Holy shit, Sands of Time was, like, so good. Like, they had the original Rayman games.
Yep.
True Crime, Streets of LA, was that it? I mean, that one didn't age well.
That was Activision.
That was still an experiment at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. They used to try weird shit, Ubisoft. They used to, like, and the 360 era, they continued. They had, like, Child of Light, and they had the Valiant Hearts and those kind of smaller, in that amazing UbiArt engine that, for some reason, they decided to stop using. I don't know why. And then it became about four franchises that they have to make $60 billion off every release.
Yeah.
Yeah. It definitely sounds me off because it's like, you know, it's this, like, just where does the – what – drove those decisions to kill the creativity.
Success,
I guess the line must go up.
Yeah.
Like you can't just
Sometimes I don't even know. I mean, that's an easy way to do it, and that is it. But I feel like the line could also go up on, like, lots of little games doing pretty damn well for themselves.
See,
and I feel like the people running these games, the only way they know how to talk is to say bigger, better, more stuff, and that is kind of just snowballed out of control.
I think, like, you get, like, the sort of the pure business people, because, like, you know, these companies were started by creatives, and then they would bring business people to help, and then eventually the tide sort of changed. So instead of being the creatives leading and the business people supporting them,
the business people
took charge, and they don't really understand the a lot of the approach that you need to be a successful game studio.
I remember about a decade ago where EA insisted that everybody had to use an engine that was only really suited for first person shooters. Like, everything was on Frostbite.
Because they bought DICE. It's like, got to use Frostbite. And before that, when they bought Criterion and forced everyone to use Renderware.
Yeah.
And
then they bought Criterion and didn't let them make any more Burnout games.
Yeah.
Because they let them make a couple of Need for Speeds. Holy crap.
Yeah.
Burnout 3, again, so fucking good.
Yeah. Like,
Burnout 3 is still really good. If they wanted to do a slapdash late, they could do a lazy HD release of that, and I bet it would still be pretty fantastic.
Oh, it's still great. And honestly, that era of extreme sport games. I miss it. We get a bit of Tony Hawk now and then. This just came out. So we get a bit of a flashback.
It's a weird fixation with snowboarding, like in the early
But the SSX era. World, SSX 3 and SSX World were fantastic. You got their burnout games, which are very much on the extreme sports sort of thing. Every extreme sport got a shitty game that wasn't Tony Hawk.
Criterion was doing hoverboarding before that, actually.
Oh, yeah. Freak Style.
I had Trick Style, and there was another one on the PS2 as well. Which I remember looked like wild, like watching, like.
I just remember their first game was Scorched Planet, which is a PC game that was kind of a 3D defender.
Mm.
But that's way before, we're talking like mid 90s. So that's way off kilter.
Yeah. Well, we also had Hope in the mid 90s, but yeah.
And only this era could have produced Def Jam Fight for New York.
Oh, man.
Oh, gosh.
And I love that game, and I will die on this hill. I reckon it's the best, like, pure, like, one-on-one brawling game I've ever played. And it still is. It holds up.
Very specific category.
It is, but, you know, there's been some attempts at it. It's not Street Fighter, and it's not a wrestling game. It's kind of somewhere in between. And it's just so good, and it still holds up. Like, I play it. I've still got my Xbox hooked up to the spare telly downstairs. And it's the one game that probably I play the most on that thing is Def Jam. And it's so
remember
much
fun. Ready to Rumble Boxing? This was like a whole thing that exists back then. Like,
yeah. But, yeah. And then they ruined it with the 360 version, which was terrible.
Oh, God. Did you watch the Digital Foundry in-depth history of like Tokyo Extreme Racer / Highway Challenge?
No.
Because I did not know that there was a 360 game that they made.
Oh, really?
And it is super wild because, like, those games always had a very simple, clean aesthetic. So even if they were never the most technically advanced on any system, they always still looked pretty good because they kept it simple. And then they cut to the footage of the 360 game and, like, and more than any other point in my life, even outside of, like, Unreal Engine 3, I was like, boy, that first couple of years of the 360's existence had an aesthetic.
Yep.
And every game looked like that.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, to be honest, the 360 was pretty inventive too.
Yeah, I mean, we still had hope at 360. We can bleed into the mid-aughts a little bit.
Like. Yeah, like even they launched with some cool stuff that was odd. Like they brought the cover shooter into existence with Gears. You know, that was a whole thing for a while where everyone was copying
it. First, but it popularized it and every game suddenly had a cover system.
Yep. And not
better and worse.
Yeah, yes. Some it worked, some it probably didn't really need it, but you know, they had like weird things like Dead Rising, which I know you're not a massive fan of, Tim.
Yeah, I appreciate that it exists. I personally didn't enjoy it that much.
I quite liked it.
I think there's an alternate version of that game that I would super like. It just let the pace.
I think I like number two better because they added some like fun mechanics with making your own weapons and stuff like that, which was cool. But, you know, stuff like that that made a home on the 360. And they really tried new things.
Yeah, I think a big part of this is, like, I still say the Dreamcast is the first console for 3D where the games that look good will always be able to look good.
Yeah.
Mm.
Like, put them on an emulator and scale them up to the resolution that fits the one display, and they're clearly not going to look like modern games, but they're going to look fuck ton better than Nintendo 64, PlayStation 1, and Saturn games in a way that these systems that are followed don't look better than the Dreamcast games.
Yeah.
Yep.
So there was this whole sudden sense of potential of like, okay, we have started to figure this shit out. Let's just see where we can go.
Mm.
And that kind of happened a little bit again with a step to HD, but like, yeah, like there's like, it used to be like, hey, new console, let's invent a new franchise.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, that literally was the excuse to hit the reset switch. Like, that's why Jak and Daxter happened, then Uncharted happened after that. And since then, Naughty Dog is just, I guess, like, technically, they've got a cool-looking space game that might come out in 5 years, if I'm being generous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully it comes out.
The lack of new is the biggest concern, where you got new every time you went into the store back then, it feels like, you know.
Maybe it was partly because games could just razzle dazzle, like because there were so many new technologies all the time that,
like something I think that just came to my head that I remember is like during the early 2000s, From were just churning out Armored Core games yearly.
Yep.
They churned like yearly because I would just iterate on that, on the tech and stuff. Yeah. And it's like, even though now we've got standardized stuff like Unreal and Unity and whatnot, it doesn't feel like the studios can iterate the same level.
Except if you're a RGG studio.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Those guys are fucking...
Yeah.
That studio.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point.
They're about the only ones I know that could do them and maybe Obsidian.
That studio is like proof that like good management can exist because there is no way they are being that efficient and still that creative without like somebody who knows what they are doing.
Yeah.
Making the right compromises and like greenlighting the correct projects.
I mean, I presume you both know this better than me, but like, that series started around the time we're talking.
Is that PlayStation 2?
Late PS2 game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so, I mean, it's a big one for me because, like, first, Yakuza was like, oh, maybe this is going to be the spiritual sequel to Shandu. And there are bits of that in there, but it is still very much a different thing at the same time.
Yes. Yes.
She likes it, for one.
I appreciate Shenmue. I don't like Shenmue.
But I guess that's also something about that era was like really like there was a point where like Shenmue felt like it could have been the biggest thing in the world. You could not have a game of that kind of ambition and that tone. Like, cause, I mean, it's fucking like set in the late 80s martial arts revenge.
Yeah.
Never seen this kind of before. Like, nothing like that could have that level of hype behind it, whether or not it lives up to that hype or not.
Hmm.
I think there's one. Well, so we talked about RGG. I think there's another developer from that era that still does things in that way, and that's Remedy. They obviously don't pump out like RGG.
A bit less prolific, but...
But they also, I think they're just content with making enough money to pay everyone and then make the next game that's weird and wild and wonderful. And honestly...
Yeah, they clearly have creative at the head there, so it's...
God bless them for it, because fuck, no one else seems to be doing it that way. Everyone's so worried about the dollars going up, whereas they just like, Alan Wake was successful. We paid everyone. Everyone got a little bonus. Huh. You know, it didn't sell 6 bazillion copies, but it made enough to keep going.
It's like we paid off the mortgage. We didn't need to buy a mansion.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, and that's what it feels like. And they just want to make fun shit. And I it's why I always love them because
do have to wonder what it's like to be like in your teens, because when like we were like 15, 16, 17 years old and there was a games we were looking forward to, they were coming out all the time. If I liked this, then the next one by that studio or the next one of those would probably be out within 2 years.
Yep.
Yeah.
God, there were 4 versions of fucking Street Fighter and every 6 weeks it felt like.
Right, you know? That actually still happens actually. But- That shit has not changed. But
like the one
pretty,
thing, the
pretty
one,
much unless you're a Call of Duty head or like into annual sports releases, like
Like I and I'm sure I've talked about this at other points where it's come up, but I really miss expansion packs, not little
good chunky ones.
Nickel and dime DLC, but like a whole bunch of extra content, like a good chunk of extra content in a thing a year or so after a game came out. That really was its own thing.
Yeah,
so I miss
again,
that.
So you need to play the
I'm
DLC.
About halfway through it. I'm about halfway through.
This is exactly the sort of we can talk about like the spoilery stuff at the end. Then yay.
Yeah, I'm not there yet, but I'm about halfway through. But you know, it's always in between reviews.
If you're about halfway through, you know that like the setup thing that I'm talking about. But yeah, so CD Projekt Red clearly does what Robbie's like lusting after.
I'll have to get a copy of Cyberpunk.
Yeah,
because the Witcher DLC was of that caliber as well. Like it was.
Yeah,
like,
the Witcher DLC was fantastic, and you know, there's been some good DLC still, but it just seems a bit rare these days.
It is. Yeah. Like Shenmue 3 had DLC, and it was like martial arts challenges or something. Yeah, it's like no.
Like Sleeping Dogs had great DLC, but yeah,
did it? Oh man, Sleeping. Okay, we're getting past the era, but like,
we are. But
God, Sleeping Dogs.
It needs a mention every three or four episodes. Ending,
it does, and it's on sale for like $5
all the time. Yep.
I'm not like hyperbole $5. Like I'm actively consciously aware that this one goes down to $5 like every other month.
Yep. Yes.
Anyway, yeah, I miss it. I'm just like being like, if I'm excited for a thing, it's going to come out.
And we've mentioned it recently. I feel like we've got a combination of we're old and cranky now, but also that the business is kind of old and cranky as well now. So, and like,
yeah,
that, you know, we feel like we're kind of longing for the old days, whereas the business is kind of voting for Clive Palmer. That's where I kind of feel like the games industry is run by people that vote for Trump and Palmer and cockheads like that. And we're the guys hoping that the Greens get in at some point, you know.
It's funny because it's true.
Is it funny?
Well, it I have sad? To laugh or I'll cry.
Yeah.
I mean, right? Like, I'll cry when my inner child who wanted to make games from the age of eight is like, it's not what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, disclaimer, like, bless the indies, you do occasionally get like this cool, like, wild stuff out there.
But, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Abilities are there. Although, again, like being a kid, like I guess, like I would have loved to have had Minecraft when I was 8.
Oh yeah.
And the idea that game would just stay with you forever in itself is actually like kind of, I wish not. That I forgot the name. Notch was less of a knob.
Yeah,
That's a sentence I'm trying to make. But.
Yeah.
And honestly, so, I don't want to take away from what's happened after that era because there's been lots of great games. Absolute fantastic games, and there's been some fantastic experiences to be had. But I feel like that era, for me at least, was the most exciting.
Yeah. It's like, even if everything wasn't good, like that bubbling potential is kind of like what I like wanted to get back to. And it felt like, you know, people, and that's not going to, like, nobody at Microsoft in particular, and I bet PlayStation's not feeling super safe either at the moment, even if that's happened to them, is really feeling like they have the creative freedom to like stretch.
Because like, it's all run by
like,
money.
I've got a wife and a kid, and I don't. And if I get another job, I may have to move them halfway across the country as well. Like, and that's like the good case scenario.
There's another thing that I want to mention, maybe my last thing, but like we had, you know, PC and console and handheld, and games felt distinct for each.
Yeah.
You know, I remember spending a lot of my commute times on my GBA or PSP, and the games that I was enjoying there,
very different,
were different to what I was playing at home on my PC or whatever. And I kind of nowadays, you know, everything's the same because we've got handheld PCs. Which
has really, really smashed that all together.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I kind of miss having like that. This is my I'm out of the house on the train game, and this is my at home game.
I think they do.
I don't miss having to buy things twice, but there was a design difference in philosophy.
Yeah.
Like
I just miss those games feeling different.
Although I don't think Sony ever fully got that. I loved the PSP a lot and the Vita, but like both of those consoles felt like they were trying to chase being a real console a bit too hard.
Yeah,
no, you're right. Like, especially I remember like the Vita
versions of Resistance. Launched
with that promise and then it floundering and then.
It launched with an Uncharted gameplay. And yet the best game on both of those systems is still Luminous.
Yeah.
I had some pretty good God of War games from memory.
I think the PSP had one of the best wipeouts in Pure, which is a launch game.
Oh, that game got way better when you actually got to play it like full HD on the PS3. Though, when they like went in, like that was very good. Now, God of War, weirdly, the old format of God of War, despite how like epic it's supposed to be, because it was also so arcadey and snappy, it actually kind of worked better on the PSP in some way.
Yeah.
I cannot see the modern God of Wars having the same impact on a handheld.
No. They're very much a cinematic, full, big telly game. Yeah,
it's like, what's the biggest TV in your house? That is the one you are
using. That's the one you play it on. Yep. Yeah, and there's a lot of games like that now. But, you know, we've got indies for handheld experiences. There's, you know, games like Cult of the Lamb sings handheld.
Yeah.
You know, that's a perfect handheld game. You know, they're there. They're just not. Specific to handheld anymore.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah. I mean, definitely talked
it's
about that.
Why we had a whole 5 years of this would be a perfect Switch game, like said, like all the time.
Very true.
Yep.
I hope they indie start to get a hand of the Switch too, because although the thing, I guess the last thing to wrap this up with is like, because Yuzo is still his ongoing blue sky.
Yeah.
Of the year project of games don't need to look any better than this. And like some of them are 15 years old. It just,
Yeah.
Like seeing Spec Ops, the line on that list was like, wow.
If you just use some older rendering tech and just then you can turn all the settings way up if you're using this tech from like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And like have the crispest display imaginable, and it's probably going to look really, really good.
And I guess where I'm getting with that ongoing thing, and I have this kind of theory, I'm going to write something about it at some point. But
and you could make,
I feel
three
like
games at the time of one.
Yeah, that's like, why are we wasting resources in chasing realism when the games look this fucking good from 15 years ago? You know, you bump the res up. Use that tech and have a smaller pipeline, a smaller development overhead, a smaller, you know, safer game development. It's more sustainable. I feel like a lot of the problems in the industry, apart from the money men, obviously, they're the biggest problem, and I'm not shying away from that. But it's the sustainability of development and chasing tech and making it more realistic. It doesn't need to be. Like Just Cause 3, I've been playing that. It looks fantastic. You are zipping around on this beautiful tropical island. Things blow up wonderfully. I don't need ray tracing to make that look any better. Like, it's not going to improve it. It looks great. And you can't convince me that it would look better now with ray tracing. It might look, you know, there might be more detail in the guy's face or something. But when you're zipping around, blowing things up, who gives a fuck what his face looks like? You're not even looking at it. You're looking at his back of his head. So, you know,
it
like
depends on the genre. I bet horror would benefit a lot from really good ray tracing.
I think, yeah, you know, and there's absolutely certain games that will benefit from that power, but I think there's so many games that don't, that spend so much money on chasing you know, kind of smaller and smaller gains, and the gains are getting smaller, and the money to get those small gains is going up rapidly. And I think,
you know what's
going
to happen though, and this is what we're going to, like, the impression that we're going to end on is like, everyone's going to look at Grand Theft Auto 6 and like go, you guys do that.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's the problem, because Rockstar have unlimited money, and they've given Rockstar, like, sorry, 2K have given Rockstar the leash. They've said, go nuts, because we know it's money.
You are the golden goose of the industry at this point, it seems.
Yeah.
You've got all the time in the world and all the money in the world. That is not sustainable for any other company.
Here's the thing, is it wouldn't even be that expensive in an experiment to do for like Sony or Microsoft to say, you know what, go make a Devil May Cry style action game.
Yep. See how it does.
Look at the production values of like one of your bigger PS2 games and like see what you could do with that. We give you a year and a half. You don't need to go any, like, here's a tech. You can use PS4 entry level, whatever. And like, let's see how it looks, see how it performs. You're going to lose a fuckload less money than they have on some of those live service games.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even anyway. 360 era, you know.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, we've, I was so proud that we like really time efficient before, and we're starting to like go a little long now. So yeah. Huso, thank you very much for your time. Please continue to play old PC games and like post pretty pictures from them.
I will. It's been fun doing so. About a Storm review will be up soon. I've got a bunch of hardware reviews coming up as well. A light bar, which is interesting. I quite like it. Really flash projector that my whole family's upset that I've got to send back, and a new Alienware monitor. So it's kind of, I'm deep in hardware.
Oh man, you've got the toys.
Yeah, yeah. I get to keep the light bar. The other two have to go back, sadly.
Oh man, flashbacks to when Ken like got like headsets to review. I think you and Jason got them, and like I was like, I'm about to move to Japan. I can't send it back. This is a pain. And then they just, and Jason reached out to PR and they said, just keep them. And I was like,
They changed they changed PR after we got them. So,
received them?
Oh, yeah. And the new PR mob went, we don't care. So.